Gun dressed uncut, yeah, you know that's us. Where we only speak the real and the real rock with us. Where we motivate the people and politic on success. Oh no, we ain't DJ Khaled, but they swear we the best. Gun dressed uncut, gun dressed uncut.
Man, what's happening? It's Contrast Uncut, Season 3, Episode 1. You know we're kicking off the new Season 3, right? You know what I'm talking about? It's your host, DJ Wine Dollars, like I want some money, a.k.a. Zylo. I want to give a special shout-out to Bobby D. Presents and Uncle Snoop's Army. I wouldn't be able to do this without you, brothers. And, you know, let's get into it. I got a very legendary guest for this third season. And, you know, I grew up listening to this brother since I was young. I mean, slacking all the music from Leans Back with the Click. And, I mean, from the monumental transitions he's done in his independent game. And pretty much moving units out the trunk and getting the whole hustling brand of the Bay Area. And pretty much leaving the imprint with Sick With It and Block Movement. I'm talking about, I got OG B-La. B-La G in the building.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. What's the deal?
Man, God bless you. Man. Oh. Presence, man. You know, virus free. I've been quarantined up.
What's good with it?
Man, how you think it's working for you?
Yeah, it's been good, man. You know, everything been moving and grooving as it should, you know, maintaining. And, you know, we're here, we're fucking with it.
Yeah, bro. Let me let you know that time is the most finite thing we have on this earth, man. So I want to make sure I let you know, first of all, that I appreciate your time for coming on the show, man. So I got a quote, bro. Let me know how it relates to you, or if it doesn't, it's all good. I still want you to talk about this contrast and effect.
All right.
You pray for rain. You got to deal with the mud, too. That's part of Denzel Washington.
Okay. I definitely know that. I definitely can resonate with that. You said you play in the ring?
Yeah, you got to deal with the mud, too.
Definitely got to deal with the mud, too. You got to, that's just saying, basically, you got to pick the bitter with the sweet. And anybody that's in the game or not from the game understand that it's never going to always be sweet.
Right.
And for those that's been in the game, that's been on the bottom flow, it's never always going to be bad, bitter. So, you know what I'm saying? You got to take the rain with you, man. So if you're willing to take the games, you got to be able to take the losses, too.
Yeah, I like to think of, like, you know, Kobe and everything. He said some of the other stuff, but this quote that, you know, that resonates with me as well is like, you know, you got to enjoy the losses. You got to enjoy the time when it's hard. Because when you up and you in that righteous, you know, you want plan A and plan A works, ain't nothing better. Because you ain't going to turn back to them moments where you just don't have times.
All right. So, my partner told me that the L's don't stand for losses. They stand for learning lessons. That's what I'm saying. So, it's like, if you don't learn from it, then it's a loss. You know, that means you keep repeating the same thing over and over and over and over again, and that's that becomes a loss. But if you get in it and, you know, it's a lesson, like it happened to me, and it'll happen again, learn from it, you grow.
Absolutely. So, you know, it, all of this ties into my next question. It's an origin question. You know, did the game choose you, or did you choose the game?
I believe that, in a sense, you know, as you have a choice, and I don't care what game you're talking about, like, you know what I'm saying? So, when you're growing up, you know your rights and your wrongs, you know what I'm saying? So, it'd be your choice if you want to get into whatever it is, you know, gang activity, drugs, whatever it is, you know, whatever kind of game that you will play is your choice to get in. But with me, I felt like living in the Bay Area is game infested. You start off in the game, you got to work your way out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? So, yeah, so it ain't like we got a choice. And before we got here, It's been many other players and other games from the Black Panthers. You had even from the musical standpoint, coming from my city, Sly Stone, Sly and Family Stone function. So we had people already laid together for growth in all aspects. Like I said, the Mac opening with the hip stuff, and then we had the Panthers. And, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff going on the West Coast game-wise. So you born in it, so to speak.
The soil is where it originated.
Yeah, you got to move. You got to float to the top and carry your way out of there. It's like the trap. Born in the trap, you got to get out of the trap.
Yeah, you see what really life on the other side of you.
Right, yeah.
No, you got some real deep knowledge. But my reference when I'm talking about the game, you're talking about like the entertainment, the music industry, that, you know, the success that you've been able to reach.
I believe that when it came back to that part of it, I would have to say the game kind of chills me. I can say that because we tried to get a record deal with the game. We tried to get signed. We tried to get, and if it was up to them, you would never heard of an E-40 either jet or click, because they said no. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, so a big motivator.
So they said no, they wasn't digging it. So we had to figure out through the game how to, you know, push past the no. How are we going to get our records on the shelf? How are we going to do it independently? Is there another way that we can do this? Since they said no, we can't just let them tell us. We got to figure out which way. But maybe back off. This shit, you got to move. I'm a dead grave underneath.
We're getting in there.
Not to touch
on my, I think we are going to cut that off just to get that sound going. You know, when you're getting these gems like this, man, you want to get every part of it. One thing for certain is that, you know, the Bay Area is like one of the big staples of hip hop, and to this day, you still gotta, you know, slap a few of the people across the face and let them know, like, hey, a lot of this shit is because of us.
The thing is, they don't realize, and I understand, I get it, that, like, you know, you from a younger generation, and nobody sit down and schooled you and tell you how we got to this point.
Yeah,
maybe they didn't school me about, you know, the Aretha Franklin's, Marvin Gaye's, and the people that came before hip hop.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it was people that always came prior to.
Right.
That let you know. Now, coming from where I'm coming from, in my era, we did listen. We had no choice to listen to my mama's records and stuff like that. So I got to learn who these people were, and it's embedded into you because their music was more like a healer. People were going through things and they would use the music as they do today. A lot of people party today, but back then they used to use it to, you know, just to get through the times, you know what I'm saying? People moved from down south to Northern California, and, you know, they were, you know, just new area, new people, you know, trying to find their way. So they used music to bring people together, and it was a happy feeling. I guess it was more like a, if we can't get along no other way, we can get along musically. It creates the harmony. So they
bridges the gap.
Yeah. So in them days, you know, your parents had a stereo with the speakers on the side.
They wearing the wood, all wood.
All wood. Had the little disco lights going.
Yeah.
8-track player in there, and that motherfucker, they playing that motherfucker from sun up to sundown. You know, the screen door open.
The corner parts.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? They're playing cars. You know what I'm saying? They just living their life, they having fun. I mean, you know, that's what the music was. It was more like a healer, good time type of situation. You know, that's what we were really used for.
So as you were going through your nose and pretty much how you guys had to pretty much create a way to the market, you know, what was your guys' confirmation of, you know, this is what you guys should be doing with your lives? Like, I know, for the listener that don't know, this brother had great success in the beginning at Grambling State.
Right.
And the transition to coming out here and making sounds, and, you know, it took people not to understand it. but it took for everyone else to buy it locally in the surrounding areas so you guys could get the imprint.
So what happened with us, being from the Bay Area, we got to see Too Short make cassette tapes for, say, this D-Boy, or this dude right here that's getting money in the game, and he do what he called a special request. And for us, being in Vallejo, to get a hold to, like, an old Too Short tape where he was selling them for $5, that was classic, man. You got that Too Short, like, you know, we dubbed from each other, and, you know, we selling the shit in the radios and shit like that. But just coming from that type of thing, little shit, he didn't have no record deal in the beginning, but we heard his music because he was out to Trump, tape to tape, you know, so you seen that hustle. You seen people do it from the ground up, you know, trying to do it. So it's like, shit, we gonna mimic this too, but we're gonna take it a little further from we actually gonna make a wax record, you know, at the time. It was a maxi sale. So we went and called Rainbow Records and we printed it up. At that time it was called MVP, Most Valuable Players. And that's the cover where we on there. So I think about 1988, we got a Green Fever sweatsuit song. But we in the game. We in the game, but at the same time, we started to get money, being us in the game, but now we want to do this music. So we got enough money to put out our own music. How much it costs to make this? Oh, for real? How we got to go do this? We learning this from St. Charles at the same time because he put out a gospel record. So once we get locked in on how to get things moving, we put them together. Now we got the record. We're like, oh, shit. How we going to sell them? How we going to get them to the DJs? So we just started figuring out ways. So we started putting them in liquor stores, at the corner liquor stores, you know, put the albums on liquor stores, sell them, put them on Simon in liquor stores, start going to different, at this time we had warehouse records and different record stores. You actually walked in and bought records and cassettes. We used to go in there and put them on Simon. And it's crazy because at that time, probably like 88, 89, I think the cassette had just now, I don't know what year the cassette just came, but it just now.
It was on Fast Fire.
Yeah, just now. Yeah, because it went from A-Track to the wax from DJs, and now pick them the cassettes. So by the time the cassettes come, that's when we become the click. You feel me? That's when the Left Side EP came out. And when we did the Left Side EP, I think we pressed maybe 5,000 cassettes or something like that. 5,000 cassettes. And we took the cassettes, put them in the cars, and sack them all over the Bay Area. Niggas had parking. We driving in the traffic over here, somebody got some slap. They're like, hey man, slap this. You know what I'm saying? Actually, before the Left Side, was it Left Side? Maybe Left Side came out around the same time as Mr. Flamboyant. Either one of them. When them both was out at that time is when the streets started to gravitate to us. And they were like, what's this? It's something new. Like, you know what I'm saying? So we started, you know what I'm saying, hood to hood, block to block, on foot. On foot, though, you know what I'm saying? And just, you know, shaking the hands and kissing the babies and hanging out and getting drunk and just, you know, people looking at us like, oh, y'all stars, y'all kicking it. We're looking at them like, we love y'all too. Y'all want to go to y'all house places? I don't know. You know, we're just kicking it like that. So I think our beginning and drive, us being from the streets and then connecting with niggas that was in the street, people that were in the street at that given time, and they were active, is what made us build our fan base. You know, we actually, like, we wasn't the artists that came out and you just heard about us and seen us in magazines. The only way you really heard about us and seen us in that time was we was on foot.
In the streets.
Going into record stores. Yeah. We went to Louisiana. We went to Texas. We were flying places. Yeah, really.
You had to work. There was no business. You had to.
You had to. Wasn't no Instagram. Wasn't no Facebook.
Yeah.
So even getting the music, the actual music, the actual cassettes and stuff to the stores, to different distributors, one stops and stuff like that. You had to go out there, fly out there, and send them. Put that on the ground. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. All that's money. Now y'all emailing. They all can send the nigga. I had to get somebody on my track. If I didn't fly him in to get on my track, I would have to actually send him the whole reel to his session way out in Texas. They waiting on the reel, then they put their votes on, they got to send the reel back. But now, we own
digital.
So that's just crazy. But then I just been here from that to now. So
but what's amazing about that, and you said it, you said the right word, you said it's timing. A lot of people at that time, consignment, it was only labels that was able to negotiate with these stores. And at that time, you guys were able to pretty much do it all on your own.
Well, what happened was, we was able to move around because just as you have major distributors, you have independent distributors that distribute independent music. So, and then you had those independent distributors in like each region. You go to Texas, you have South by Southwest or whatever, not South by Southwest, but one of them things out there, but you had different people that actually distributed your record. So say like this place called One Stop or whatever, they might say, okay, we need 5,000 units. So you gotta ship them 5,000 units. Another place over here in the South or another place in the Midwest. And you had to fulfill the orders like that, but then certain distributors had different retail stores that they was working with that covered the area. If you was going to Walter pretty much had Kansas City and the Midwest on lock, So
you guys were used to a lot with Bob Brown too at the time.
Oh yeah, Bob Brown, all of them. Yeah, because we started off like with Jason at the Music People and Walter over there and what's the name of that place? Forgot the name of their distribution company. But we fought with Washington over there. And it was good. It was like, because at first we came in, like I said, we was putting it on assignment, saying, like it. That shit caught on fire. Now we bring the truckloads in and they hand us a check.
Mm.
My first album that I went through there trying to get a buck.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sold like 41,000 the first week back then.
Wow.
On an independent with no promotion or nothing. First week, 41,000 copies. You know what I'm saying?
They barely able to do that now.
Well, yeah, I'm saying.
Wow.
History.
That was back then. And that was when, they was getting about 10 bucks of a woo-wop, on the independent side. Yeah.
Winning.
You had to do your own promotion, your own marketing.
What was the name of the store y'all was posted in front of for the album cover?
That's a good one. It's in Fairfield, though. So it's called, it was like a Quick Stop Liquors.
Yeah.
It was by Susan because the photographer place was over there. And we just went over there, man, real quick and just took a picture.
That's
really vibing.
Yeah.
I was really vibing. I was like, man, let's go ahead and get a paper bag. One pop trunk pulled the pistol out. Took a picture real quick. Those police came.
And
yeah. Got so, this is the way it went down. We did the music. We were doing the music, did the music, but we were still in the game. Right? So in the game back then, just say you was working with a unit, and a unit around $20,000-$25,000. That's what you was dealing with.
Yeah, yeah.
On the block. So we go down there, and we drop off 5,000 sets, right? 5,000 at just say $10 a piece. That's 50 bands. At that moment, when that check transpired, we knew that was my confirmation. This is the way to go. See what I'm saying?
That's when it got real.
Yeah, we down here, you know, fucking around with this little, you know, fancy. We dropped this small little thing off, but we usually didn't have to go run, didn't spend no gas money hardly, and got a check for 50. So
I ain't never seen that in my life.
This is the game I want to be. Nah, y'all go ahead. This is it. But really, if you rewind the clock, we imported in a band in our life. We come from music. Right. Played, you know, in junior high school marching band, played drums, you feel me? So me being in the music, something was already in my DNA. It's already in my.
First line
quads. Yeah, okay. I was captain. I was even captain too. We used to go against each other. But so that rhythm beat shit was already in. When the music started coming, and you know, at the time it was, you know, how what was going on the street. We just basically reporters for what was already going on. So that's how AWA was. Street knowledge, reporting knowledge was going on. So we joined, but we come from the Bay. The Bay Area was totally different from any other place. So we wasn't sounding like nobody. We wasn't trying to be like nobody. Before we had an unorthodox style. I had the slow mob style, so it was like a peanut butter and jelly situation that they never heard before. And that's at that moment, like, you know what I'm saying? It didn't, oh, this is something different. What would this party be like? Yeah, what the hell is that? At that given time.
You was like, we fucking with this.
Yeah, one another.
I was crazy to hear stories from certain, like, big East Coast rappers and people from other regions, and a lot of their first times experiences came from, they would legitimately say, oh, E-40, be legit, taught us how to smoke weed, do shit
right. And so what I like to tell people, I mean, because I'm not, I know a lot of young rappers come up and, you know, they've not full of themselves, but they think that they've been everything.
Yeah.
They don't realize there's nothing new under the sun.
Right.
So when this other rapper said, I'm the first one to say this, or I'm the first one to say this, we're like, well, actually, in 1900s. In 1999, there was this guy. You know what I mean?
He said, play. He used to try to play a hater.
Right. So, you know, it's funny, but you don't want to fight your battles. You know, you don't want to discourage anybody's creation, or you don't want to sound like the bitter OG.
The heckler,
or stuff like that. So you just be like, hey, man, you know, whatever.
Let's get to this money.
Yeah, let's get this money. Don't matter. Like, the shit that you're arguing about.
Don't matter at all.
Like, I seen somebody's big face out right here the other day, saying that he made Air Force Ones popular. He might have been in this era, but in another era, Nelly made him popular.
Yeah. Another era.
Somebody else might have made him popular when they first came out.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Right, so these arguments, these debates, these is the glass half full or half empty?
She gonna be drinks. Be happy.
It's cold, it's wet.
Man.
You know what I mean?
So, you know, through, as you guys are pretty much starting to really make waves all across the Midwest, Washington, Oregon, you guys really starting to track waves with everything. You know, what were some of the highs and lows as you guys were starting to make the deals and get distribution and pretty much really just take over the scene? And some of the stuff you guys did, nobody was able to do.
Well, when we first got here, the main thing that started was the click. That was everybody. You know, that was everybody as a group. That's the group was signed. Got signed to, before we got signed, you know, we did it independently, but you know that. So we sold a lot of records. And then at this time, you know, the major started coming and wanted to have sit down, we want to talk, you know what I'm saying, see what it is, what we do to broaden the horizon or whatnot. And we like, at this time, you know, we can do the math of the kind of money we've been making, take all the building. So, you know, so we like, yeah, we can sit down and talk about it, you know, if you can show us how we can make more than what we already doing, how this asset, how your machine can plug into what we already got going and make it better. To make it make sense. Then, yeah, we did. So we sit down and, you know, we got it all worked out. Everybody got different. It's unorthodox, you know. Right. So, it was a label deal, it was a solo deal, it was different solo deals, it was P&D, president, just P&D deal, I forgot the biggest part right there. But anyway, there was a lot of them mixed into one, and we were able to get it worked out, and we were the first ones that were born here, and kind of be like, look, we already got this, how you gonna make this happen, and they did it. So they put it together, so that's when it clicked. Came out with Emulated.
Hurricane. You know.
Stuff like that.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So the Down and Dirty album kicked off, and then the Game Related one, that's when we're going to go. It might be time, man, but it'll go back in. Yeah.
It's true.
And then that was also the birth. Not really the birth of our solo career, like going into it'll be our solo careers after getting a job. That's what the city was
saying.
Yeah. And you started seeing Pimpers in, you started seeing Daryl Hall, you started seeing the buddy kick in with this, you know, this special. They're bigger artists, bigger videos, bigger buddies, and stuff like that.
Real quick, was Sarah Smile your idea to get Daryl Hall for that?
Yeah.
The Gamble Smile?
Yeah.
That's dope.
Oh, actually, wasn't my idea, my bad. My fucking bad. So, this lady named Laurel Dan, she's working job. She laid it on. So, when I did the record in Seattle. We were on rainy days, you know, I did the record. Like, rainy, I really felt the record.
Yeah.
And I was like, no. I have a final say. So I sit with her. And she said, we really love this thing. She said, would it be something that we can get Daryl Hall on? She said, wow, make some calls.
Wow.
So she sent the record to Daryl Hall. So the people that kind of people sent the record to him. He said, he got two big tall boxes. CDs and tapes and put out back there cassettes. And people want to remake the song and do it. You know, songs that he got done here. They turned all of them down.
Wow.
He heard this record and said, I'm with it.
Damn.
And not only was he with it, he was like, he didn't take 100% of the record, like, it's a show record. He didn't take 100%. And, you know, he was nice enough to leave me a nice portion of the record. Like, he only took 50%. And he could have took 100%.
Yeah.
It was his song. He performed on it. Yeah, he sang on it. He did a video.
Yeah.
And it was his music. He could have took 100% of that song.
No one's ever done that song after that either. No one's ever really did it or anything like that.
It was crazy. I flew up to his house in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
I flew up to his house. Went to his house. He had a studio with his back, Joe Bar shit. Who was Do Never? And they mixed the record there. And what else? Oh, he can have little bottles of Coke. They gotta be glass.
The old school?
Old school.
Yeah.
12, I think they 12.
12 ounces, something yeah. like that, yeah.
12 ounce big bottle of Coke.
Wow.
And that's what he fucked with. That's what he liked. You know, don't want it in a can. You don't want it out of
no teammate.
Glass.
There's something about that glass. There's something about that glass that gives him what he needs.
Turn the thing over. Man, it's you sweat and immediately cooled off. I'm good. Okay. You like flame. So, bruh, I mean, we was going into some real deep history, some of that you don't hear anywhere else but here.
Yeah.
So what were some of the highs and lows through all that? Because, I mean, there was some big highs. And, I mean, everybody thinks so really, you know, you get up here and you have all these things working for you, manifestations working, but they don't realize, you know, there's still things that happen that make things a challenge.
No,
it's good.
So listen, when you get signed as an artist for a group, it's like the sand, you know what I'm saying?
It's the time.
It's the time. And normally, a lot of people, as an artist, is back then, like, you know, your career might make 5 years. If it was good, you made it past your freshman and sophomore album, you did a 5 album or 5 year, you might. That's what they say. They would ask you a question when you interview like that. So, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? You know, that's the question. And a lot of those dudes, you know, or women or whoever, you know, they had that window of opportunity, and then after that, they just go out. And the reason why a lot of them go out is because they didn't know how to put their own records out. They were dependent on these companies. Right. So the company might feel like you figure 10 times their money they put in it, but they're not really going to be interested in what they put your record out at that time. You know what I'm saying? It's like you talk to people having $1 million video budgets back in. You know what I'm saying? So, it's like you go on that shit. You don't get up here, or you ain't gonna make it. What else is a little different? Because we up here, with the record label. If this doesn't work, we come down a step back to our independence. We still rolling, and we got a better look because we done had national exposure.
Did you prepare for that going into it, knowing that, hey, this can go any direction, even though we're on top of the game right now?
No, it's just like, anything you get into, it's a cake. You started from the middle, still got to go back down to the bottom to get it up. From the bottom, I got right here. Now, we made it right here, and we start to decline. We're not going all the way back down. We just going to come down a level because we still got the business aspect of it and the machine in place. We know how to do it to the store. At this time, we're talking about, 90s, early 2000s, 90, all the way up to like 99, something like that.
I mean, you got 30 plus years in the game.
Yeah,
so when we talk about these people that have 5 year careers,
right.
You guys had a whole different route. I mean, it was a 30-year plan. Y'all going on 40-year plan.
Yeah, so it's different. Like, like I said, these people, they 100% depend on a record label to make them who they were.
Yeah.
By default, we learned the game because we didn't have a record label taking some of the game. So that forced us to learn. Yeah. How to get shit rolling. So from there on, it's like whether we own or off, we roll. And then fast forward to now, you really don't need it because you got the internet and all the shit video is full. If that's, you know, how to grow that.
Right. So, you know, through all of this, I do want to bring up something important because, you know, you didn't know how.
Wait, man, you did. I'm not bad. You did want to know about the lows.
I ain't gonna lie, Brady, it hasn't been too many. Because you gotta set a plan. A lot of people get in and don't have a plan.
Yeah, it do get fucked up for some people, so to speak, when 12 o'clock strikes, you know, when the Cinderella story when the 12 o'clock strike, it turns into pumpkins. Because in the beginning, you think you are Cinderella. They're going to give you money, everything that you need to put the park, since you're going to get them, those in, you know, rented cars, New York, all too, you know, to look the park as this marches. But then when, you know, your hopes is up, you know, you go out living like, this is cool, but I don't want to shake up. So that's really going to take me on the patch. But you didn't realize that all the times you hop in that limo and all that food that you ate, you thought it was on them. No, that was on me. They had to recoup all of that. And that money that they gave you in advance, that was coming from the money that you was going to make on the end. That wasn't us just giving you none because we are artists and we like you. But you got to pay that back.
Your business.
So when you see that chicken, you got these little parentheses around it. That means undercooked. It don't mean that you're one. It means you still owe this amount.
Wow.
So then you go borrow some more money and get deeper in that hole for your next album. So for some people, that would become your low point because you find yourself digging yourself a hole for your whole career. And you don't want to tell too many people. If you're touring good enough, you can make it look like everything's fine.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You get tour money, but really looking on the record sales, it ain't as smooth as you thought it was. If you have a regular deal, like a regular artist deal, and go off the date, you be in the group with four people like the click, and you got to split that.
Yeah.
So then you're a solo artist too, though. You don't hear a song with me like, man, and then the thing is, this out as a solo artist, that check came back, boy, it's huge. This one right here, I only got a piece of pie, so you like, you only naturally you don't focus on what makes you your most money.
Well, so, makes sense.
So this is when the group tends to kind of Yeah. Then in the groups, the good thing, you know, we family, so we have different ties to one another versus a regular group when people start pulling. Or like just say like a Commodore, the old groups, and a company come in and say, hey, you, lead singer, think you ought to go solo. You feel me? And we like you. But what about 38 Journey? Okay, but girls are screaming you. I'm finding that gets you to kind of turn your back. Yeah, they is screaming my name. And then your loyalty, your everything that you stood for kind of goes out the window for the business so called aspect. That's why you see a lot of groups breaking up. People ain't talking to each other no more. Whether that money in that pie there for everybody.
I was gonna ask about each guy as a family member, so kind of like, you know what I mean? Obviously, you must have had some disputes, but being within that.
Well, it's just what I said, everybody kind of, I mean, we did a couple of clip albums.
Yeah.
It's only like two. But it's over 30 or 40, 40 hours. 15, 20. We was in that. So,
that's what happened. Yeah, I get you.
You see what I'm saying?
In a nutshell, yeah.
You tend to know what's going to bring home the great love. But this is all good. This is love. This is something that was built. This is something that went down in history books. That's all love.
Yeah.
But you have to keep elevating. You have to keep going.
Right? Absolutely.
Nobody told you to stop there.
So I gotta ask, you know, what got you to the lifestyle of being vegan? You know, what helped you transform to a lot of politics to do that?
Donald Trump. So tell me, when Donald Trump was running for president, and he was actually going to win this election, I said, well, you need to raise your frequency a little bit so you can actually see what's going on, because you got to, not like, I have followers, I have family, I have fans and stuff like that, and they look to me to figure out, hey, well, what are we doing here? What the world doing? You know, so I'm gonna figure this one out. I'm like, oh shit, I don't come prison. Oh, this is gonna be something different. I need to raise my frequency. So I was hearing about raising the frequency. You can do it by not taking in animal products, no meats, stuff like that, to eat more greens and stuff that will be more enlightened to, you know, what's going on, more in tune with the universe and nature-wise. So I done did a lot of stuff against my body, you know, being in music and touring and stuff like that. So I felt like, you know, wanted to this second half of life, getting older now, was
be smart about it.
Yeah, like, let's
you want to be here longer.
Well, it's just like I was using regular oil, now I'm using synthetic. You know, far got over 100,000 miles.
Yeah.
You know, the goals starts taking this move. You can't put all that poison.
Yeah.
In the old cars, you put poison in the new cars, and vice versa. You can't put it in the old cars. Then you get the situation solved today to where we were given a lot of foods that wasn't given, that wasn't right for us back in the slavery time, called malt shillings. And it became what they called soul food.
Right.
The result of eating soul food, today's soul food, let's say today's soul food with genetically modified ingredients and the antibiotics that we give these animals, what they feel. You're not even getting all the nutrients that you're supposed to be getting.
Yeah.
You're not getting all the shit that you take that's supposed to be getting in your daily, you know, your diet.
People think it's healthy for you to feel full and lethargic and comatosis, and it's not.
I even say that, I don't know what it's called, bloody or something. You can't be, that shit don't feel good. That shit is miserable ass action. You know what I'm saying? Like, just be barely can breathe. But like I'm saying, back for today, not the coronavirus is out. Who was it getting? The people that got diabetes, people who have lung issues, asthma, and stuff, but not being healthy. The result of not eating properly makes you more accessible to disease.
Right.
Disease can't live in the body if you don't carry it, don't eat spirit. So humans come from animals and animal products. So that was one of the things I wanted people to be more conscious, more aware of what was going actually going on, not what the people were telling me. So it's time
to do it. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. Because a lot of people got into it. Oh yeah, you know, some people don't even know why. Just because it became a hype, or it became a, or some way that people wanted to lose weight or whatever. But I think as we born, leading from the age of Pisces born to the age of Aquarius, which is the age of information. Information is out there, and people who are being more conscious about everything, conscious about what they digest, what they take in. Like, wait a minute, that don't sound right. First, it was like, Okay. For everything you heard on the news, everything you see, it be laid down. So I'm waiting. So people are waking up, being more conscious about whatever they digest, whatever they put in, so they, whatever they take in as knowledge, whatever they take in as food, and so on and so forth.
That's deep. It's powerful. I like to say knowledge is power, meaning you use that knowledge, it's superpower.
Yeah, it's just
enhanced.
Yeah, definitely. It's like faith without the works. I got faith. I can shoot this basket in the hole, but if I don't ever shoot it,
you ain't gonna never know.
It's just talk.
It's just talk.
So, you know, I want to get into my awareness segment, and, you know, it's pretty much, I have a lot of youngsters that watch the show, and they don't know if you're doing situations that, you know, when the red and blue lights hit, that high beam hits the back of their neck and searches the back of the car, or the seat, the passenger seat, you hear that blurb sound, and you're being pulled over. And, you know, a lot of the time, people are aware of what to do in the situation of getting to the money, they don't know what to do when they get in the situation, the lights come on. And, you know, other times it's innocent people that just drove it and, you know, they get pulled over and don't know what to do. So I like to ask that everyone on my show that comes on, you know, when's the last time you pulled over and what's some advice you can give some of the viewers, you know, on what to do in that situation?
Yeah, well, let me see. Last time, I don't want to get pulled over, but I drive like an old man. And then like, I don't be doing that shit like that, but I think I did get pulled over one time, maybe because of bad tag on the plate or whatever. But anytime that I'm getting pulled over, I want to go home that night. I ain't got time to go to jail. I don't want to waste your time. I don't want to waste my time. And I ain't up to shit. So I'm going to comply. See, the thing what people want to do is like, you know, you got this attitude in your mind, those punk ass officers fucking with me. I'm a lot of black people with all this type of shit, but they get me like that, and they get the opportunity that they're not like that.
Right.
So, for me, my best thing is just to comply, like, man, I'm gonna pull over. You know, I'm gonna keep my ear where you can say, well, we don't need none of this ball stuff they have, that last registration. They give them the last verse, they ain't gonna talk sleep to him. None of that. You don't know, but that's my way out of the situation. If I get this dude to come down to my level, I'm playing in my game. I'm trying to get him to come down to my level, but again, I'm trying to do, you know, respectful, whatever.
So you have to do the process.
Let's just get through the process. And if he still is a kid, he still will get through the process. I'm gonna sign the ticket. Do whatever I gotta do and be on my way, but I'm not gonna give you a reason to take it further than this. It's a citation that I do wrong, whatever will be my ticket from my house. I'm not gonna be like, you know, giving people no reason for going to pull me out of the car, search the car, all bullshit.
Why?
So I just try to finesse it and get the fuck away from it. Because, I mean, you know, it'll be in a bad situation.
So, you know, the last time I was in the Bay Area, I did an interview with Muggsy. And I left Muggsy's studio, I mean, left Muggsy's gym, right, and headed down to Vallejo to do another interview with Claire White, an attorney. And I got pulled over driving from Vacaville to Vallejo.
Right.
And they caught me on some bullshit because I had my GPS up. My GPS thing, I hit a little speed bump or whatever, you know, a little thing on the road. Falls to the ground, I pick it up, look at the thing, and CHP driving by, so it gets me. And, you know, I'm still dealing with that shit right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, shit. They go, you know, you can argue.
Oh, no, I took it back about the situation.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like, I ain't gonna lie, is that a half time, I might have, you know, it's a little bit of weed on for sure. You know, but that ain't,
it's kind of
funny. Yeah, but that ain't even the issue. It's like, you know, I don't want to go through having to get booked, having to bail out, having to go get my car out of the bail. If I'm thinking I ain't doing it, right. You know, I'm done, got that. There's some responsibility here. That's what I'm running with.
Right.
I'll look at that.
So, you know, we got into the intensity of when the last time you pulled over, you dropped the gems and awareness of what to do. I like to transition out and have some fun. I have this segment called Trading Places. You know the movie with Dan Aykroyd, Eddie Murphy, but, and you know, they wake up and the minds have changed and everything's different. So on this episode, we're going to take two iconic people and trade their lives. But question number one is, will it work? And question number two is, what would life be like with them trading places? And for you today, I got Janet Jackson trading places with Kim Kardashian. Question number one is, will it work?
Yeah, I think it would.
You think Kim K could fit into the Jackson 5, and you think Janet Jackson could fit into the Kardashian lifestyle?
Well, I'm not saying
that's
okay, we talking now.
He's talking about years.
Well, Janet ain't really. Janet is trying to be a mom, but she being a mom right now, so I don't see her really touring, doing a whole lot of situations. Or maybe about a billionaire, right?
Yeah,
okay, so we just trade billionaires.
Yeah, that's
true. About 5 billionaires and we trade parents.
Yeah.
On that aspect. Now,
you're right.
What does Kim do? What does Janet have to do that Kim does? Did he volunteer?
Social media?
I mean, it's not a hard.
That's fair.
That would be the question.
Will be one thing different if they trade places.
What would be different? I don't think Janet will be, you know, giving all this 50 plus no more. I think Super Bowl is it for
her. Well, it's like we really forget how Kim K got really on the scene. We all know Janet's a freak, but she ain't got no tapes out there that we can check out.
That's amazing, though. You know what I'm saying? Type of wealth coming out of the household just. They are the Jackson.
They say if you're a rapper and you get with any of those daughters, you pop the baby in them ASAP.
I pop child support. I need that.
Take care of me.
Yeah, that shit is crazy, though.
You survived trading places. Now I got this next thing that we do. It's called Impulse Q&A. And pretty much we got a company that got cards, and they put questions on cards. We take these random questions and ask you. If you don't like the question, we just pass it. And you know, it's just for the fans. And let's hit you with it. Question number one. What's the funniest thing you've seen a kid do?
Unfortunately, a lot of these questions are corny. I try to pick some that were just pretty simple and easy to answer.
Yeah.
Is this some way worse than that? And I was like, I can't put that on Bila, man. I ain't going to do that.
All right.
Well, question number one. What's something that you've never been able to do well?
Play the guitar. Okay. I try to get on that motherfucker. You know what? I'm really amazed at talent. When I see people that never took a lesson, they just naturally get up there and they play the piano or a guitar. I'm more stunned by that. But in drums, I'm more stunned by that than a magic trick. I'll be like, that's a God-given talent. Like, you ain't never. Because I tried to go through the lessons and couldn't get it in.
Damn.
you know, I took piano lessons, you know, so I tried to bring it off. I got my little rough pick on the coordination and the feet. But I could play drums. Yeah, that's crazy. And I was in a marching band, so you had a march on beat. People be amazed at that. People be amazed at the rap. I'd be amazed at people that can get notes and sing, but play guitar. So.
Yeah. Question number two. If you got stuck in an elevator and forced to listen to one song, what song would you pick?
Stairway to Heaven.
Nice.
I don't even know this song, but I just stepped it up. Get the fuck out of here.
You know, and I'm gonna get one from the brand. So if you were trapped in a country, like a third world country, and you had to sell one item to get back to America, what item would you take, and what would you go to sell?
What? In America?
No, no, no. We have to be in a third world country and try to go back. What's trying to get back to America?
Goodness, great. I'm trying to get back. I'm gonna take. Wow, it's gonna be bad. I'm gonna take a mini pair of Levi jeans and Nike t-shirts to buy.
Wow.
Because when you live in a third world country, anything that's made in America is worth more. You feel me?
Wow.
So you take some American made Levi's or some American made stuff that comes from America made in the USA. But I remember going to Jamaica. And I seen a dude right outside the resort. And he had a Jesse. He looked at me, looked down at my back and sandals. He's like, man, give me shoes. I'm like,
no problem.
I was $10 on the way here. You know what I'm saying? So I gave him a little sale and I was out there on a jet ski. So, and before I left, I said, I gave the man my suitcase. And all those are all like, because he took me around to the Kingston. He was like, my guy, and I was like, no, I'm going to go fucking around over there. You know, then he bought me some weed. So, became kind of that cool on my little 3-day there. So when I left, I was getting all of those. But you probably won't sell them. I don't know what
you want. Came up.
Yeah. So like, you got
relationships. Relationships. You came up in Kingston on relationships.
Yeah.
So, bro, what are you most excited for coming up? You know, I know there's a lot of stuff always in the works when you stay working.
But right now, we're getting the this beat line together. This beat line is out right now at the hip hop station. Getting ready to cut in my blunts, big blunts. So we all out to California on that big line too. You know, I'm excited about the drive today. You know, for the hip hop station itself. So for that, I'm kind of going fly through 32 or something more. Falling in time. It's like you're going to pick up your joint.
That's what's up.
Music-wise, I'm about to drop something real soon, probably like next couple weeks. Next month or two, something like that. So I can do that.
Yeah.
Once you've been in the game for so long, and you know, you feel like you just want to drop an album and throw it out there. You know, like, at this point, you ain't got nothing to prove. So,
right.
You just give the people something to rock. That's all I'm going to do. I got like 3 of them in the holster. I think I started doing it like every 2 months. Because me going back to the 1900s again. As long as we drop like 1 hour a year,
yeah,
that album lasts, you go longer, a whole year. Then the next year coming up, you expect. You know, he's taking so much back. You know, nowadays, the attention span is so short. The world moving so fast. You definitely got to give them some good content. You got to keep giving them content. Yeah. That's what Instagram is about. That's what Facebook is about. SoundCloud. If you want to keep followers and people that tell you that true content. So now we start to like faster, receivers start to like faster. It ain't really like a design setup like we used to do back in the days. It just, they drops out this thing. They call you out, you just feel like about 2 days before, you know what? It's 1,300 likes, I'm about to drop this bitch.
Yeah. In a sense, because you and your family has kind of laid a foundation of what the Bay is. Does it ever surprise you in a way that you guys are still rocking with it, or that's just a naturalness of being from the Bay with y'all hustle? Because a lot of people really cannot last as long in hip-hop, bro.
I think it's because, like I explained earlier, it's because it wasn't first of all, like say, like our fan base was solid. They were our fan base was people doing better in life, you know what I'm saying? A lot of people are locked up, a lot of people are dead. And the music reminds them, you know, as we need to reminds them of that time that they lived. Mm-hmm. Like you say, where I grew up on you. That means something.
Yeah.
That's different. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You became a little boy to a man off of my music.
Yeah, so we're getting gang.
Yeah, I mean, real talk, bro.
Getting gang. Shit. So, those people stayed solid.
Okay.
And they kept the support. You might not have it for me 5 years. If I can drop the album, they going to get it.
Yeah. Come none of y'all were too.
Yeah, they were going to get it. And they just... That's just what we've been like to where, you know, we go through each different eras of music, with the hype of music, also where we are now, 2020.
Yeah.
That's a whole different genre of music, but what we laid in the band, the sound that came out of here, the, you know, the funky bass lines, that was something that was already here before we started rapping.
Yeah.
I got to explain to you, you know, it's a lot of different bands and different people that was here making music. You see a lot of rappers,
yeah.
A lot of bands, garage bands, funky motherfuckers on jam. They probably played with some of the biggest people that you know, Ohio players, you know, all the people. But the dudes, you know, we feel them, the young dudes. Dudes playing well. She came out of it, you know, she was out of the area.
So, when you notice that this show, you know, it's a little different, but at the same time, you do a little bit of the same question, but it's on a whole different realm. You know, we like to be different in contrast and cut, and we like to really, you know, get to the genuine and the real. And so, I figured out, like, how do I end my show and be different? And, you know, I end my show with asking you, you got any questions for me?
You ever give it 5 out of 10?
Hold on, Ryan, one more time. Man,
hold on. Let me give him his blunt. Let me give him his blunt. Let me get that.
That's what I asked you. Have you ever hit it for 5? And that was 10.
Oh, yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. Well, 10-20, because Jim Jones was talking about that on the
show. Could have said
Yes. Right. I came from that, like, bro, we wrote a whole beat. I'm going to put 2 switches together and fill that motherfucker up. Okay. And we just smoked that motherfucker and tried to hold it like playing baseball. Come on. Here. And you hold it to, you pass it back to the smoke out. And you got to hold it, I pass it back to you. And we got your foot with it. You feel me?
That's what I'm talking about. That's the kind of shit. See, that's the shit that we were doing at Grambling State University. This is where the feeling really originated at. You know what I'm saying? Like my partners from North Carolina, they were already both once, like the Phillies. But we in the baseball dorm, this upstream niggas in there.
Wow.
By the time you roll a little joint past, you never seen them. So, you know, this is my crazy ass. I said,
Can I kick it when I rhyme? Maybe a legend through your bonds. Think of what I'm gonna do. Fingers play that on it.
Every man for himself. You feel me? Ain't no pass.
Yeah. I keep that to myself.
It doesn't like, for me, that's fine. Because when I'm looking for the morning, that's all. I smoke by myself. But when they be looking at me in the ass, and it look like, you know, I'm like, well, puppy.
Get out of here, hey.
No, man.
On that note, Contrasts Uncut, Season 3, Episode 1. Big shout outs to Uncle Snoop's Army, Bobby D Presents.
Army, Bobby D.
Man,
my boy, Kirsten, man. You really don't know.
Jet life.
I mean, you just don't know what I do that.
That's what's saying.
That's all.
Yeah, tell.
I've had an iron pleasure rocking with the legendary Bela. Man.
Yes, sir.
Brother, I appreciate you.
It's all good, man. I'm glad you got me.
All good.
Yeah. You know what? It's your boy Bela J. When you tune in with Contrasts Uncut. Don't change that.
Right there you go. Another episode of Contrasts Uncut. Make sure if you enjoyed it, you leave a comment below. You hit some like buttons. You hit some subscribe. You go ahead and hit share if you want to. Say something nice or say something you don't want to say at all. You're not going to hurt my feelings. Comment below.